What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. Tonight, man, we got to talk about star receiver Rashee Rice is in some really serious legal troubles right now. They put a warrant out for his arrest. The Dallas PD, they're out looking for him, and he has to turn himself in or they're going to come get him. And I've been so in the dark when it comes to the Rashee Rice Lamborghini crash, because I didn't think nothing was going to come of it. You know, this is just your normal, typical, everyday thing that you see these NFL players do, blowing away a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And pretty often, they get into these legal issues and they get nothing but a slap on the wrist. However, this situation, though, it's looking pretty bad. He could do some time. We're also going to be talking about the Las Vegas Raiders. Their owner, Mark Davis, just gave them the green light to go all in on training up for a quarterback in this year's draft. They're eyeing Jaden Daniels. But can they get Jaden Daniels? Do they have what it takes to pull off a Jaden Daniels trade? J.J. McCarthy, everybody has an opinion about him. Scouts, NFL executives, they love him. Me, a lot of you guys, we're not really so high on him, but I figured out why NFL scouts and execs are hyping this dude up. I got my prospect breakdown, my scouting report on him, and then we also going to dive into some college football. It's been a little bit. The Miami Hurricanes, despite how down Miami football has been for the last couple of decades, it always surprises me the amount of Hurricane fans that I always bump into for him. Like, for Miami to be as down as what they've been, there are a lot of Hurricane fans that exist in this world, and it really surprises me. Shedeur Sanders is being so slept on, man. ESPN released their top 10 returning quarterback rankings, and you won't believe where they ranked Shedeur and who was ranked above him. And the media is just throwing so much disrespect towards Shedeur Sanders' way. The Carolina Panthers, I got thoughts on their free agency moves. The Jacksonville Jaguars finally re-signed the first-round pick. They extended star pass rusher Josh Allen. But did they overpay for his services? Before you dive into tonight's show, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Remember that we are not just a YouTube channel, we are a podcast, and you can find every episode, including this one, available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. Shout out to everybody in the live chat. Shout out to my guy, Floyd Donnell. He says, what's up, man? Falcons fan here. Man, shout out to the Falcons. Y'all got a lot of things to be excited about right now. Follow me on social media. You can find us on X at JTSports_ and on Twitter, well, Instagram at JTSports_. And once again, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify if you enjoy tonight's episode. Before we start off, here's a word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner Mint Mobile has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I was not really paying a lot of attention to this Rashee Rice incident because I didn't think nothing serious was going to become of this. Normally, we see these NFL players pretty often get into a lot of legal issues off the field, and they get nothing but a little slap on the wrist. And I thought this was going to be another one of these cases, but this situation has turned really serious. The Dallas PD put out an arrest warrant for Rashee Rice due to an accident he was involved in. And March 30 or March 31st, him and a friend were racing. He had a Lambo and he ended up getting into a six-car accident. And then him and the fellow driver that he was racing with, they fled the scene. And then we would soon discover later that he had some marijuana in the car. He also had a playbook in there, some jewelry, a check. And the people that were involved in the crash, how are they? Are they all right? They had some minor injuries. So this thing isn't Henry Ruggs bad, but it is still pretty bad because with the warrant that they put out for him, he has one account of aggravated assault, one account of collision involving serious bodily injury, and six counts of collision involving injury. It's not looking good for Rashee Rice. And I'm not a lawyer or a legal expert, but the maximum prison time that he could receive is pretty lengthy. Even if he does find a way to beat these charges and he gets off with a little minor punishment, some community service, pays a fine, gets put on probation, he still is going to have to face consequences from the league. And he definitely is going to miss at least four games. You know, the NFL, when it comes to their punishments, they normally don't really F off. They make it hurt. So I could see him having a five-game, four-game suspension. KC, you get Marquise Brown in free agency, and everybody's excited thinking about the dynamic duo you could have next year with Hollywood and Rashee. And there's a strong possibility that we may not even see Rashee Rice be able to suit up week one next season for Kansas City. I mean, at this point, there's a good chance that this dude may not even be free. He may be locked behind bars watching the Kansas City Chiefs play next year. And it's just really surprising how these NFL players are given a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And they just make bad decisions. I understand that they're humans. They're not robots. They make mistakes just like how me and you make mistakes. But what would give Rashee Rice, you know, the wherewithal to think that it was a good idea to be street racing? Go to a racetrack. You know, why are you trying to live life like you're playing in GTA 6? And then you're racing with weed in the car? That makes absolutely no sense. If you're going to race, at least race with nothing else in the car that could get you in more trouble. This just isn't a good look for Rashee Rice all the way around. He is young. Young people make mistakes. And he didn't kill nobody like Henry Ruggs did, but he did get some people hurt due to his actions. He went on Instagram. He accepted accountability for his actions, which is a good thing. But you effed over Kansas City. We don't know if you're going to be free. And if you are able to beat this, you're going to miss some games. They're going to have to draft another receiver pretty high because they don't got a lot of depth at receiver. At least anybody that you can look at right now and be like, oh yeah, that dude could definitely be a serviceable number one for a few couple of weeks. Or at least until Rashee Rice can get back healthy, or not healthy, but he can, you know, serve whatever punishment that he receives if he's able to beat the legal battle in the courtroom. The NFL definitely is going to give him a suspension. The question just is, how long? So until he returns, Kansas City, you're going to have to find somebody who can fill his role. It definitely isn't Kadarius Toney. You're going to have to find that answer in the draft. You got Marquise Brown, but he's just a really high-end number two. He's a really good Robin. For Marquise Brown to be really effective, he needs a Batman. He's a really good sidekick. Rashee Rice could have been that Batman in this situation. But with him, you know, potentially facing years behind bars and a potential suspension, we don't know what's going to happen with this dude. And Kansas City, you just have to go ahead and go about things in the draft as if you might not have him available. You might not lose him for a few years, but you might be without him definitely for a couple of games. Could you get A.D. Mitchell? Could you maybe trade up for a Brian Thomas Jr. maybe? Hell, is Kansas City trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr. out of the question? You may look at Rashee Rice and say he was solid and he could come back and shake back from this, but if you could get Marvin Harrison Jr. for 2 first-round picks, how do you not pull the trigger on that if you're Kansas City? I don't know what you would do with Rashee Rice. Maybe you move him to the slot or whatever. Maybe you move Hollywood to the slot. Who knows? But it's not looking good for Rashee Rice, bro. And I know he has to be looking back on this, feeling really, really stupid. Because the Lamborghini looks really nice. It really does. And you want to be able to enjoy the merits of your hard work. And what's the point of having a car that goes that fast if you're never going to have the opportunity to put the pedal to the metal? But at the same time, you're an NFL player. And it's easy to look at these guys and say, we would do a lot better if we were in their situations. But, you know, a lot of people have their own ways of going about living life. The only problem with Rashee Rice in this situation is that, you know, you can't use the open world as a racetrack. The world isn't GTA. If you want to race, rent out a racetrack, rent out a private location or private property to do it. Don't do it out in the open for people to get hurt. When you're driving, not only are you responsible for your life, but other people's lives as well. That's the whole point of having these long virtual driving classes, to teach you road safety, driver safety, you know, looking out for yourself behind the wheel and the safety of others. Rashee Rice, this just isn't a good example of what an NFL player should be setting. And this is why when you see players around draft time that have some character concerns, why ESPN and the NFL Network spend so much time reporting on it. Even if you have a clean rap sheet, you've never gotten in any trouble at all, you could have a guy like a Henry Ruggs or a Rashee Rice end up doing something stupid like this. And I promise you, this isn't the first time he's been doing this. Normally, these players, when they street race, they've been doing it for a while. It's just now they got the luxury cars, they got the money now. So 9 times out of 10, they're going to win the majority of times. It doesn't even make any sense trying to challenge one of these dudes to a race. Now, in this situation, the other dude had a pretty high-end luxury vehicle also, but that's not really the point. The point is that Rashee Rice made a stupid decision. He hurt his team. He could be hurting himself in terms of his freedom. And this is definitely one of those things that just makes the NFL get a bad rap when people think about NFL players and how they conduct themselves off the field. You know, I kind of get a little upset when I see the people making the jokes the NFL stands for, the National Felon League, because not a lot of people in the league are knuckleheads. Most players know how to conduct themselves in a pretty well-mannered way. But you do have guys who tend to like to have a little bit more fun than others. They take it a little bit further than what they should. And they go off the deep end and they don't think about the consequences in the process. And apparently that's what looks to happen to Rashee Rice in this situation. all I can say is I'm hoping and I'm praying for the best for him in this situation. I'm hoping for the best for the people who were involved in this, that everybody's okay, that everybody can make healthy recoveries fully. Nobody gets no long-term damage. So maybe the Chargers won't be, or the charges won't be as severe on Rashee Rice. So hopefully everybody's in good health. And Rashee Rice, you know, he can take this situation, not really have to face any prison time, hopefully, because nobody got severely hurt. And he can learn from this, grow from this, and not repeat this again. Because, I mean, you would hate to see somebody with such a promising future throw all this away on just a stupid adrenaline rush. Because that's really what it is. It's just an adrenaline rush when you're trying to race. But, man, this does... It doesn't look good for Rashee Rice, people. It really doesn't. We can just hope for the best. Las Vegas Raiders owner Mark Davis has given the team permission to trade up for a quarterback in this year's draft, and they got their eyes set on Jaden Daniels. Antonio Pierce and Jaden, they go back to Arizona State when Herm Edwards was the head coach there, and Jaden Daniels was early into his college career. And they got a really good bond, a really good relationship with each other, and I really want to see this happen. I would love to see Jaden Daniels suiting up for the silver and black next season. The only problem is that, how are you going to be able to get Jaden Daniels? There were a lot of things that need to happen for the Raiders to get Jaden Daniels. And it's not even about them being able to fork up the assets to even get into a position to trade up to land Jaden Daniels. But you got to hope that the Commanders don't draft Jaden Daniels. Is Jaden Daniels going to pull a Eli Manning? That's the only way the Raiders have a chance at getting Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels has to pull a Eli. He has to tell the Washington Commanders, listen, I like you guys, but nothing personal. Don't draft me. I want to play for the Raiders. I got a good bond with Antonio Pierce. Let me be a Raiders. Maybe the Washington Commanders say, you know what? We'll trade down. Or maybe they say we're just going to take J.J. McCarthy and then they'll have to trade up with the New England Patriots. The Patriots, they are a team that they don't need to touch a quarterback this year. All right, they don't really have a good roster. They don't got a lot of talent at receiver. You got some questions with your new offensive coordinator. They definitely are a team that for the right price, they'll fork up that third overall selection. The Raiders got to give up 3 first-round picks. The problem with this trade, if you're the Raiders, is that you don't care about giving up the 3 first-round picks, especially if you have the opportunity to fix your quarterback situation. Jaden Daniels, if he ends up reaching his ceiling, he could be one of the best quarterbacks in the game, and he definitely is one of those QBs that if he reaches his ceiling, he could go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. You have a first-round pick this year and the next 2 drafts, is that enough to entice New England to want to accept your offer? Minnesota, they could give up 3 first-round picks, but they have 2 first-rounders in this year's draft, 11th and 23rd. For a team such as New England, I don't see why you would be thrilled to accept the offer like that. You got 3 first, but they're all for the next 3 drafts. You want first-round picks that you could use either this year or the following year that could turn your roster around immediately. You know, having 3 first-round picks for the next 3 drafts, I mean, at least you could say you got 2 first-rounders for the next 3 years, but I just need a little bit more value than that. The Raiders aren't going to be willing to fork up Max Crosby. Maybe you can ask them to give up a receiver. Maybe you just ask for Jacoby Myers back. Maybe you try to get an offensive lineman from them. You got to find a way to get some value out of the Raiders more than those 3 first-rounders, because I don't really think that's enough. You see, the only time a lot of first-round picks looks enticing is if you can package those up with first-rounders for the same draft. You got 2-3 first rounders for 2024. Use those to trade up for the number one pick this year, for example. For the Raiders, the trade up from where you're sitting right now, you're going to need Jaden Daniels to pull a Eli, put you in position to find a trade partner that's willing to accept 3 first rounders spread out that length. Because if I'm a general manager, if I'm accept any trade for a top 5 pick and I'm asking for 3 first, I need at least 2 in the same draft. It doesn't matter if it's this year or the following year, but just 3 first rounders the next couple of years spaced out like that, not a big fan of a trade. And even if Jaden Daniels manages to get the Commanders not to take him, what if the Patriots don't want to trade down? What if they want to draft him? Then what? Is he going to have to pull the Eli Manning twice? Can it work that way twice? Eventually, a team might just have to say, you know what? If you want Jaden Daniels, you just going to have to flat out trade for him, and maybe they just might up the ante. It just would be a miracle if the Raiders could find a way to land Jaden Daniels. Realistically, the only way this could turn out in the Raiders' favor is if you trade up with Arizona at 4. They possibly could be okay with 3 first rounders, maybe additional second. The Patriots, okay, they pass on Jaden Daniels. J.J. McCarthy, they like him and they take him 3rd overall. Drake May already is off the board because he went to the Commanders at 2nd if they're not okay with Jaden Daniels. But Jaden Daniels is just such a good fit for the Washington Commanders and Cliff Kingsbury's system that it's hard to envision a world where they do pass on him. And even if they do, Drake May most likely would still be the pick. You're going to need Drake May and Jaden Daniels to still be on the board by the time the Patriots turn the pick. Because, listen, if one of those guys goes, another team is going to take the next one. You need J.J. McCarthy really to go 2nd overall to the Commanders. With Drake May and Jaden Daniels still on the board, the Patriots are going to have to pick between one of those two. If Jaden Daniels pulls the Eli Manning and says, hey, don't draft me, to the Patriots also, then the Patriots can say, you know what? Okay, we're cool with Drake May. It's fine. And then at 4, with you trading up with Arizona, then you land Jaden Daniels. But I don't even see how any team would be enticed to accept any offer from the Raiders that doesn't include a high-end player. You might have to fork up a Max Crosby to end up getting one of these picks. Normally, when you trade up to get a pick this high, you got to give up multiple draft picks and maybe a high-end player or maybe a solid player. The Raiders, it doesn't seem like they're willing to part ways with any of the players that they have right now, because I'm pretty sure the Jets would give up the 10th overall pick for Davante Adams. It may be overpriced, but they're willing to do anything it takes to appease Aaron Rodgers. The Raiders aren't willing to trade Davante Adams. If they're not willing to trade a guy like Davante Adams or Max Crosby, they're not going to get Jaden Daniels. It's just really hard to envision a world where Jaden Daniels doesn't go 2nd overall to the Commanders. And even if he does, you know, still stay on the board for the Raiders to maybe snag him at 3 if they can trade up for him, I don't think they got enough to entice a team just based off draft capital. So that's my thoughts on the rumors about the Las Vegas Raiders trying to just go all out on getting Jaden Daniels. Listen, it's like we can dream. I know Antonio Pierce really loves the brother, but they got no chance in hell of getting Jaden Daniels at all. The quarterbacks in this year's draft, man, they need to avoid getting drafted by the New England Patriots, because if any of these top quarterback prospects such as J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, or whoever get picked by New England, their career, just go ahead and automatically throw it in the trash, is going to be wrapped for them. The Patriots are probably the worst situation that any rookie quarterback can go to. First, they don't have a good offensive line, all right? Their offensive line situation is really shaky right now. They don't really have any decent receivers that you can look at and say, oh, yeah, like, you can't consistently move the chains. You can't consistently get open. I mean, Kendrick Bourne is nice. He's a decent wide receiver two, wide receiver three, but you need more than that for a rookie quarterback. You got Pop, DeMario Pop Douglas, who had a really promising rookie season out of the 904. I like him a lot, but that's not enough. I mean, you got two solid running backs with Ramondre Stevenson. You signed Antonio Gibson in free agency, but you got one of the worst offenses in the NFL in terms of talent. And your offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt, who was the OC for Cleveland the last 3 years, this dude has only called plays one time in his whole entire career being the coach in the NFL. And the 1 year that he called plays was with the Buffalo Bills back in 2009, and they had one of the league's worst offenses. The best thing they did that season was come from behind against New England. That was it. There's not a lot of reasons for New England to draft the quarterback this year, other than maybe the draft class next year may not be that good, because you can't tell me that, well, JT, the Patriots may not be in this situation again next year to draft a quarterback this high. BS. Bro, this team is not good. You mean to tell me that the Patriots are going to win 6-7 games and have a top 7, top 8 pick? Yeah, I doubt it. Strongly doubt it. This team, if anything, they might end up having the number 1 overall pick. New England this year, it would be in their best interest to just take the 3rd overall pick, trade down and get more assets. Trade down with Minnesota. You get the 11th and 23rd selection. That would be a good trade. You get the opportunity to select two players that could have immediate impact for you right away. And then in the later rounds, you know, you can continue to find some diamonds in the rough. My problem with New England drafting a rookie QB this year is that there's just a lot of moving parts that they have. And for a rookie QB just to be thrown in a situation as bad as New England, you're pretty much just throwing them out to the wolves. Unless you're going to say, we're just going to sit you for a whole season behind Jacoby Brissett, but it's hard to imagine that happening. The only time I can really recall a team staying committed to sitting their rookie QB for the whole entire year, letting them develop behind the vet, was Kansas City, only because they were good, and the 49ers. When you're a good team, you don't get put in pressure moments when you're like, okay, F it. We got to throw the young guy in there because we ain't got nothing else going for us. New England, I don't think they're one of those franchises that if they draft a young QB, they can just rush him out day one with how bad of a team they are. Jaden Daniels and Drake May, they may be able to run around and run for their lives, but you don't want them getting effed up so early into their career where they end up getting traumatized and then you stunt their development because they're paranoid to stay in the pocket because the offensive line don't let them get clobbered so many times. New England just needs to chill. Plus, you got a defensive-minded coach. And it's not like you are bringing in a Kyle Shanahan or a Sean McVay disciple. You're bringing in a dude that only called plays 1 year. And the 1 year he was calling plays, the Bills' offense was one of the worst in the league. So if I'm Gerard Mayo, I'm staying away from drafting a quarterback, at least in the first round. Second round, let's say Michael Penix, Spencer Rattler are on the board. Okay, I might throw my hand at one of those guys. But early on, first round, third pick, nah, man, they need to chill, because any QB going to New England, you're walking into a situation where you got to turn nothing into something. And whew, do you know they got Juju Smith-Schuster? Do y'all even remember Juju Smith-Schuster, bro? I damn near forgot this man still played football. I haven't heard of Juju Smith-Schuster ever since Kansas City, pretty much, man. The rise and fall of Juju Smith-Schuster is crazy. Like, y'all really think, do you really think Drake May, Jaden Daniels, or any young QB in this draft could survive and actually have a productive rookie season with the arsenal in the passing game that New England's going to be giving them, man, going to New England for a rookie QB this year should be considered no man's land. If anybody should be pulling an Eli Manning, pull an Eli Manning on going to New England, bro. Gerard Mayo, I like him, but he's only been coaching for 5 years. Like, That I want New England to succeed. I really do, but I don't know about New England. I really don't. Like, we could be seeing New England in for some really bad years. And it may not just be a couple of years. It may be for a couple of decades, bro. Like, J.J. McCarthy has NFL fans and NFL executives and scouts split. Because you have NFL fans who believe that this dude sucks. He can't play at all. He shouldn't be a first-round pick. Meanwhile, NFL GMs and scouts, they just see this dude as all world. So I'm here today to give you guys the truth about J.J. McCarthy. Is this dude as good as what NFL executives are making him out to be? Or is this going to be another situation like we saw with Mitch Trubisky where the fans were actually right on this one? After watching J.J. McCarthy's film, and I watched every throw of his from last season, I'm not going to lie, I was really surprised. And I kind of now understand why the hype for him from these NFL guys is so high. Because the first 9 games of last year, they looked really good. Okay, J.J. McCarthy was looking really good inside of the pocket, avoiding pressure, throwing with accuracy. He was starting games out 7-for-7, 8-of-8, 12-of-12. One damn game I watched, he was 12-of-12. And he can play really well in structure. And you know, with a lot of these head coaches, they want a quarterback that sticks to the script. You know, they don't want a quarterback that goes off script and starts trying to do his own thing. They want him to play within the structure of the offense. You know, go through your progressions, 1, 2, maybe 3rd progression, nothing there, checking down, or run with the football. That's what J.J. McCarthy does a really good job at. But he also does have the ability to get outside the pocket and extend plays, and he is really good throwing the football on the run. And also what surprised me is he's a really good athlete. He's really slippery. That's the best way I can put it. Like, he's slippery. Like, guys are just slipping off him. He's stepping up in the pocket, throwing guys off him. Really big dude, really athletic. This dude can run, and he can make you miss, too. Okay, he definitely is going to be one of these quarterbacks that could come into the league and have around 800, maybe 1,000 yards in the season on the ground. He makes a lot of tight window throws also, which is a big plus in the eyes of NFL evaluators. Every time I watched J.J. McCarthy play this past season, there wasn't a single tight window throw that he didn't really have too much success completing. He makes those tight window throws look so easy. And to make those throws, I guess you do have to have a good sense of anticipation. Unless you just have a rocket for an arm. J.J., he does throw with really good velocity. And I love the way that he throws the football. To me, he throws the football with a really good base. And it just looks so pretty. He throws really nice, tight spirals. And he's a rhythmatic passer. What does that mean? That means that when he starts the game out fast, let's say he starts out 4-for-4, you get him going early with maybe a bubble screen, a few slants, maybe an outright, you get his confidence high early, he starts the game out hot, he's going to have a good game. But if he starts the game out slow and he struggles early, he's going to have a bad game. And that goes into my big weaknesses and red flags with J.J. McCarthy is that oftentimes when he got out to a slow start, it was against teams that had good defenses. Penn State, Ohio State Hell, even Maryland on the road, he struggled against them. He struggled against them. And he struggled against Bowling Green. He had two really bad interceptions. When I'm assessing a quarterback prospect, I'm looking for what are you going to do when you're going up against the best teams on your schedule, especially when you're playing with the kind of talent that J.J. McCarthy was playing with. He played on the best team in college football this past season. So with that, there's no reason why you should be struggling against teams with equal talent. When you're not looking good against the biggest teams, well, the biggest games on your schedule, that's a huge red flag for me. You should look good against these inferior opponents like Eastern Carolina, Rutgers and Indiana, Michigan State, because they suck. They suck. But when you're going up against the best teams on the schedule, that's your chance to prove yourself. Even in the college football playoffs, he didn't look good. On paper, he had a good game against Alabama, but he looked nothing more but a game manager to me. And Washington, that may have been the worst game of the season we saw out of J.J. McCarthy, minus Penn State, and Penn State wasn't even that bad. It's just they didn't put the ball in his hands. Against Washington, he was really inconsistent with pressure in his face. His accuracy was off, and it's not like they were throwing a lot of passes downfield. He was throwing the ball in the dirt to receivers when they were just doing curls or hitches. It's just when I'm looking at J.J. McCarthy, I see a quarterback that is really, really streaky. As I said in my strengths, he is a rhythmatic passer. You have to get him in rhythm early. You got to get him starting hot fast. If he starts out 4-for-4, 5-for-5, 6-for-6, he's going to have a good game. But if he starts out 1-of-5 passing, you're not going to get too much out of him that afternoon. Against Washington, I was really disappointed. Washington's defense wasn't good. Their defense was mid at best last year. And he just looked awful, awful. His best play was when he threw a dig to Roman Wilson on the third down. And late in the game, he had a big run on 3rd and 8, which kept the drive alive for Michigan. Other than those two plays, there was nothing to really take away from that Washington outing out of J.J. and say, oh, yeah, this dude deserves to be a first-round pick. Overall, I think J.J. McCarthy is a decent quarterback prospect. He's my 7th-ranked quarterback in this year's draft class. He is going to be a first-round pick. I wouldn't take him in the first round because the ceiling is high. If he can end up putting it all together in the NFL, he definitely has the ceiling of being an elite quarterback. Great arm, throws with great velocity, really good athlete. You know, he could be a baby version of Josh Allen in a sense. He does have a little bit of that ability when he runs with the football, that guys bounce off him. He is a really physical runner, but he also does have a deceptive amount of elusiveness in his game, similar to Josh Allen. And when he gets in rhythm and, you know, his timing is right, his footwork is right, he's really good. Like, watch those first 5 games of last year out of J.J. McCarthy. I was really shocked. I was like, okay, if this is the film that these GMs and scouts are turning on and they're watching out of J.J. McCarthy, then I understand why they may be willing to trade up so much to get him, because he looked outstanding. He looked so different in those games where he didn't play good teams compared to when he played against Penn State or Ohio State. Even Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, I wasn't that impressed. J.J. McCarthy, you're getting a guy that has a high ceiling, but really low floor. And when I say really low floor, like, he could be a backup. But personally, my prediction or my projection for J.J. McCarthy's career, I think he's going to be an average starter. You know, he's going to be around a top 15, top 20 quarterback at his best, but
he is going to be one of those dudes that he's not going to lose you a lot of games, but he's not going to win you a lot of games neither. You know, I do think that he has the tendency to be a check down Charlie, and you do have the scheme guys open for him, giving some easy throws early because he's streaky. He's just not really consistent. He doesn't have a large sample size of throwing the football a lot in games, and the last time he was asked to throw the football 40-plus or 30-plus in the game, they lost to TCU, and that game was a missed bag. I'm not a hater of J.J. McCarthy. I'm just more skeptical of him than I am optimistic about him. But I understand what these GMs, what these scouts see in him. All right, if you're turning on J.J. McCarthy and you're watching him against Michigan State, Rutgers, or Eastern Carolina, you see a quarterback that you definitely could envision being one of the best in the game at the next level. But if you turn on, you watch Penn State, Ohio State, and the last couple of games of the year, you see a QB that isn't worth more than a second-round pick, truthfully. So this is my J.J. McCarthy prospect breakdown and scouting report. Leave your thoughts on how you feel about J.J. McCarthy in the comment section down below, because I'm really interested in seeing how this dude's career plays out, because there's been a lot of instances where the fans have said that a dude wasn't going to be good and he panned out to not be good at all. So fans, to our credit, we do have a good understanding of when a dude just flat out can't play. We will write about Mitch Trubisky. We will write about Deshaun Kizer. And we might be right about Will Levis again. Because Will Levis, remember, he was another dude who they were hyping up. Shout out to all of you guys that are tuned in to the live chat. Shout out to my guy, Dubs A. Hundo. He says, JT, salute, bro. Salute to you. Hit that like button. Subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. And you can find this episode along with the others in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. We got more on tonight's episode of the pod. The college football world is sleeping on Shedeur Sanders, man. You guys would not believe where I saw Shedeur Sanders ranked as far as top 10 quarterbacks in college football, man. ESPN had their college football reporters rank all of the top returning QBs in the sport this year, and they did an awful job at doing it. I might have to release my top 10 rankings because it was a travesty. And some of the dudes they had over Shedeur Sanders, just absolutely nasty work on their part. I got some thoughts on the Miami Hurricanes. I'm always surprised at the amount of Hurricane fans that exist in this world, because the program has been down for so long. You would think that the popularity of it would be so low, but I just seem to always just bump into Hurricane fans. The Carolina Panthers free agency moves, how improved are they? Did they make some good signings? The Jaguars extended Josh Allen, their star pass rusher. They gave him a five-year, $141 million deal with $88 million guaranteed. But was it an overpay? Was it a bad decision to give him so much money, knowing that he only had 1 year of high-end elite production? Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel. You're listening to the JT Sports Podcast. ESPN put a lot of disrespect on Shedeur Sanders' name, man. So they had their college football reporters rank the top 10 quarterbacks in the sport for this upcoming season, right? And do you know where they ranked Shedeur? Eighth. Are you kidding me? You rank Shedeur Sanders eighth? They have Quinn Ewers, Jalen Milroe, Jackson Dart, Carson Beck, Noah Fifita, ranked ahead of Shedeur Sanders. And this isn't the first time I've seen this. When I've seen 247 Sports release their Heisman rankings, they had Shedeur Sanders like 8th or 9th, with guys like Quinn Ewers ahead of them. The national media is sleeping did good on Shedeur Sanders this year. You want to know something that's even more insane? If you go to DraftKings and you go to their Heisman odds, if you put $20 on Shedeur Sanders to win a Heisman this year, you could walk away with $920. He has plus, what, 4,500 odds to win the award? To me, Shedeur Sanders is a lock to win Heisman this year. Okay, I don't see how he doesn't win it. He's going to have a better offensive line. He had a 27-3 touchdown ratio last year behind the worst O-line in America. Imagine what he's going to do now behind an average offensive line. This dude's going to cook. And then he has a ton of great receivers. They got LaJonte Western, who was a star wideout at Florida Atlantic. He was top three in every statistical category last year in yards, receiving yards, what, receptions, touchdowns. And then you pair him up with Travis Hunter. I mean, come on. There's so much talent that Shedeur Sanders has around him at Colorado going into next season. It's going to be damn near impossible for him to at least not be a Heisman finalist this year. I'm really shocked that the amount of people that think that Shedeur Sanders is not good, he's overhyped, he's overrated. 27-3 touchdown interception ratio is really impressive. And he completed nearly 70% of his passes last year. That's really hard to do considering the situation that he had. This year, Shedeur Sanders is going to wake a lot of you doubters up. Because I know there's a lot of you guys doubting Shedeur, a lot of you guys hating on him. You got to get that haterade out of your system, man. Get that haterade out of your heart. It's not good for you. When I watched Shedeur last year, I saw an NFL quarterback. I saw somebody that did a really good job of going through his progressions, making the right reads with the football. He also was really clutch. And the only reason Colorado won four games last year was because they had Shedeur at quarterback. You take Shedeur off of last year's Colorado team, not only do they go winless, but they lose every game by more than at least three touchdowns. If Shedeur Sanders was the starting quarterback for Alabama last year instead of Jalen Milroe, Alabama would have won it all. Truthfully, Jalen Milroe, ESPN has him ranked over Shedeur Sanders in their top 10 returning quarterback rankings. Are you serious? Jalen Milroe? Listen, I like Jalen Milroe a lot, but he's nowhere as good as what Shedeur is, especially when it comes to throwing the football. I've never seen a quarterback throw a more accurate deep ball than they do short and intermediate passes. And Jalen Milroe definitely is going to improve under Kalen DeBoer, but last year, he held Alabama back. Alabama would have loved to have Shedeur Sanders. Imagine if Texas had Shedeur Sanders. They would have won it all, too. They would have went undefeated. Quinn Ewers is the most overrated quarterback in college football right now. Shedeur Sanders clearly is the best quarterback coming into the upcoming 2024 college football season. He's going to be expected to be a top three pick in next year's draft for a very good reason. He's already an NFL quarterback. Quinn Ewers, Jalen Milroe, Carson Beck, those guys are a step below Shedeur Sanders. Y'all really need to stop hating and stop sleeping on Shedeur Sanders. Like, I really don't understand why so many people just don't think he's that good. I remember last offseason, I told you guys that he was going to be one of the best quarterbacks in college football. And y'all were talking about some, oh, man, like, this dude did that at Jackson State. It's such a different level when you're going from FCS playing HBCUs to playing big boys and Power 5 football. And then all Shedeur Sanders does is proceed to have one of the best touchdown and interception ratios in the nation. Behind one of the worst offensive lines in the sport. Behind a rebuilding team. I can't wait for Shedeur Sanders to wake y'all up this season. I really can't. And I got some more bold predictions for Shedeur Sanders on the way. But just know, you know, DraftKings, if you put $20 on Shedeur Sanders right now, you could win $920 when he wins the Heisman this year. Y'all sleeping on Shedeur Sanders, but it's okay. Like, he's going to wake y'all up. The Buff's going to wake y'all up this year. They coming. They finna kick the door down for show. They finna kick it down for show. You know, as a Miami Hurricane fan, I'm always surprised at the amount of fellow Miami Hurricane fans that I always bump into in public. And the reason why I'm always so surprised to see other Hurricane fans is because the football program has been down for so many years. It's just, you would think the popularity and the support for the team would be very low. You would think that fans would be afraid to show themselves. But, you know, it's always really refreshing to see that I'm not the only Hurricane fan around. And I got a lot of pride in my Canes. You feel me? And we got a really underrated fan base. For this team to be as irrelevant as what they have been for the last couple decades, we may not go to the games like that because we don't really get a good reason to go to the games. But there's been plenty of instances where Miami has had their moments of being good, such as 2017, where Hard Rock was sold out. In 2017, I remember when Miami played Notre Dame. That was the loudest that I've ever heard a Miami Hurricanes game ever. And I was just watching it on television. Imagine how loud that Notre Dame Miami Hurricanes 27 game was in person. So when Miami football is good, the fans support when they get a reason to go to support. And this season, Miami, this is the best team that they've had in a very long time. And I know Hurricane fans say that very often. It seems like nearly every year they're saying this team is the best team we've had since 2000 and something. But when you look at 24/7 Sports Team Talent Composite Rankings, they're top 10. They got a good offensive line, a good group of wide receivers. They should have a really good defense. The only difference between this year's Hurricanes team and past iterations of Miami Hurricanes football is that we got a true superstar at quarterback this year. And his name is Cam Ward. We thought we had that in Taylor Van Dyke. When you think about how good he was when he had to replace Derek King his redshirt freshman season. But then you get a new coaching staff in there. Rhett Lashley leaves and he just didn't look the same. Same thing with Derek King. We thought Derek King was going to be a superstar and he couldn't stay healthy. This is the year, though, that Miami really makes some noise, that this great program returns to glory. Everybody's going to be talking about Miami Hurricanes football this year, man, because you're going to have a quarterback that has a really good chance of being a Heisman finalist this year and putting up a lot of high, fantastic numbers in this Shannon Dawson offense. He has an air raid offense. I'm pretty sure he's trying to sling that rock all over the yard and run it occasionally from time to time. But Miami Hurricane fans, I believe this is the year that we finally get rewarded for our patience and our willingness to go through all this hardship. Like, when you go on Instagram, X, there's a really big Miami Hurricanes community. Even on YouTube, I remember when I started out first doing YouTube, I initially was covering Miami Hurricanes football. And I met so many people via the Miami Hurricanes just talking about the team. You know, and this is a really passionate fan base, a fan base that has a desire to want to do anything that it takes for this team to win. You know, they got a really good alumni base. The fan base always buys a lot of merchandise. I always see a lot of people rocking Miami Hurricanes gear. That's why I always ask them, hey, you a Hurricanes fan? I had a homie that I met the day at FAU who's a Hurricane fan that I had class with for like two semesters, and I never knew he was a Hurricanes fan until today. I was like, bro, I see you sporting that Miami Hurricanes jacket. Like, what's up with that? You a Canes fan? He was like, hell yeah, I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I just get so surprised at the amount of Miami Hurricanes fans there are, because this program has been down for so many years that you would think this fan base is extinct. And it's not just in South Florida. This is all across the world. Like, I've traveled to a few different states, met a few couple of different people not from Florida that are Hurricane fans. Are you kidding me? Like, we gotta have the most underrated fan base in college football. For this fan base to be as big as what it is, and Miami to be as down for as long as what they've been, you can't tell me, Miami Hurricane fans, we don't go hard for our football team, bro. We love our school. Like, after attendance, we've shown when the team is good, we go watch the games. There's no point going to watch us play when we're not good. You think there's a reason to go watch Miami play a game against Georgia Tech? I mean, when you know they're going to lose, you know they're going to find a dumb way to F up a win? Come on, man. Like, Miami Hurricane fans, we need to pat ourselves on the back. We're one of the most loyalist fan base, one of the most passionate fan bases in college football. And, you know, I'm glad to be a part of such a great and such a strong fan base. And I can't wait for us to kick some ass this season. Like, I really believe this is the year that the Miami Hurricanes are going to come back and really make their presence felt in college football again. We got talent. We got money. We got a quarterback now. The Canes are coming in 2024, man. I'm trying to tell y'all, I'm willing to merch it. I want to talk about the Carolina Panthers free agency moves, because I got a lot of mixed emotions about, you know, the moves they decided to make. And I don't really know what direction they're trying to go. All right, offensively, I like the signings of offensive guards Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis. Both of these two offensive guards are going to be tremendous upgrades on the interior of Carolina's offensive line, which was the biggest problem on their O-line last year. Robert Hunt, you gave him a 5-year, $100 million deal. That could be a little bit of an overpay, but he was the second best offensive lineman that the Miami Dolphins had behind their left tackle, who can never stay healthy. Damian Lewis, he's a really good addition to the Carolina Panthers. He's probably going to be playing right guard. Tackle, you should be straight at tackle. Akeem Okwunu, this dude has had a really weird career. Like, his rookie season was pretty good. Year two, and last year, I'm like, what's going on with you? But with the new coaching staff, a better offensive line coach, Akeem Okwunu, I don't believe he's a lost cause, at least not just yet. Taylor Morton is one of the better right tackles in the league, and he got an extension not too long ago. All you really needed to do was improve the interior of the offensive line. My favorite move that the Carolina Panthers made was trading for Deontay Johnson. You guys saw my reaction. I was really hurt to see the Steelers trading away my favorite player on the team. What Deontay Johnson is going to bring to the Panthers' offense is what they were severely lacking last year. A wide receiver who knows how to get effing open, who can create separation and get off the line of scrimmage. That's what you're going to get out of Deontay Johnson. He possibly could give you 1,200 receiving yards this year. He could do for Bryce Young what Stephon Diggs did for Josh Allen early into his career with the Buffalo Bills. When they traded for Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, he ascended for being a really good young quarterback to becoming one of the best in the game. That's what having a really good young receiver can do for a young quarterback. Deontay Johnson, he hasn't really had the greatest numbers, but it's been more due to injuries and lackluster quarterback play. Bryce Young is going to do good with Deontay Johnson and Dave Canales' system. That's all about, you know, timing, rhythm, and getting the ball out fast. I like the decision to trade for Deontay Johnson. All you gave up was Dante Jackson, who, fans, you guys aren't low on him, but you guys feel like he was replaceable in the 6th-round pick. Where my problem lies with the Carolina Panthers free agency moves, though, and where I say I have a mixed bag when it comes to how I feel about them, their defense got tremendously worse. Okay, I mean, you lost Frankie at Louisville, who was nearly the heart and soul of your defense. Yes, you did retain Derrick Brown. You gave him a long-term extension, but you lost Gross Matus, who could have been a really good depth guy, and potentially he was on his way to becoming maybe a 6'7 sack guy for you. And you replace him with Jadeveon Clowney. You signed him on a 2-year deal, but I don't know if Jadeveon Clowney is even going to be productive for you this season. Last year with Baltimore, he had the best season of his career. But you see, the problem with Jadeveon Clowney is that he's really inconsistent. Everywhere he's been in his career, he's never been the same player throughout. When he got traded from Houston to Seattle, you know, he had a up and down tenure there. You know, he's just one of those guys that he just has random years when he's good and random years where you don't hear about him at all. So if you're looking at somebody who can improve your pass rush, I don't think Jadeveon Clowney can be that guy for you. A'shaun Robinson is a really underrated interior defensive lineman. Pairing him on the inside with Derrick Brown, that's going to be nasty. But linebacker Josie Jewell, that's a downgrade from Frankie Louvel, man. He's nowhere close to as good as what Frankie Louvel was. Then you sign Kalavon Chasen. It doesn't matter if the dude's just going to be brought in to be a backup piece. Like, this dude hasn't shown to be an NFL quality pass rusher. The Jaguars took him in the first round. He quietly is one of the biggest busts in recent memory. He has to be one of the five biggest busts, at least from the 2010s. Like, Kalavon Chasen, this dude doesn't even have nearly any numbers at all. So I don't know what the Carolina Panthers are doing on the defensive side of things. They signed a couple of defensive backs also, but that defense, I'd be surprised if that defense is as good this season as what it was in 2023 and even 2022. They do got a really good defensive coordinator. All right, Ejaro Evero, he is a stud. He is one of the best defensive coordinators in the game, at least one of the best up-and-coming ones. And he could have left Carolina to take other D coordinator jobs. And he also was, you know, being mentioned in the breath for a couple of head coaching interviews also. But he chose to remain with Carolina. They made it a priority to retain him. But I like what Carolina is doing on the offense. I don't really agree with the direction that they're going on defense. But those are my thoughts on the Carolina Panthers free agency moves as we approach this year's NFL draft. The Jacksonville Jaguars have finally extended one of their former first-round picks, Josh Allen. They're signing him to a 5-year deal worth $141 million, $88 million fully guaranteed. Jaguar fans are split on this extension. All right. On one side, you have the group of people that say we had to extend Josh Allen because we have a really lengthy history of not extending our first round picks. Josh Allen would be the first rounder that the Jaguars have extended in a very long time since Blake Bortles. You feel me? And plus, he's coming off the best season of his career. He had 18.5 sacks. The problem with the people who say that, you know, oh, this is a massive overpay for Jacksonville is that Jacksonville had a chance to get this dude for way less. They were supposed to come to the negotiating table and get a long-term deal worked out for Josh Allen before last season started. But you see, they played around. And, you know, Josh Allen said, all right, you guys aren't going to give me a long-term extension. I ain't going to hold out into the season. I'm just going to F around and show y'all why I'm worth the money that I want. Not only did he do that, but he did himself an even bigger service because he made more money. Now, instead of getting him for less, you got to pay more. So this is the necessary price the Jaguars were going to have to dish out for Josh Allen. This is what happens when you bet on yourself. When you bet on yourself and it pays off, you stay healthy, you end up making more money. That's what happened to Josh Allen. And the Jaguars have to pay him more. Of course he wasn't going to take no hometown discount. You could have got them for a discount if you would have signed them before the start of 2023, but you didn't. So you had to F around, find out. The dude put up 18.5 sacks, and you had to pay him accordingly. He's now the second highest paid pass rusher behind Nick Bosa. Brian Burns is third. And I'm not talking about average yearly salary. I'm just talking about the total worth of this deal. Nick Bosa's deal is worth like 170. So that's like 30-something million more than what Josh Allen is making. But Josh Allen, this definitely is a new record-changing contract for him in a sense because he resets the market. You know, Brian Burns kind of already resetted the market, but Josh Allen, he resets the market again because I don't view him as a A-tier pass rusher like I do T.J. Watt and Miles Garrett. So those guys, when they go and they get new deals done, they're going to have to definitely be making more than Josh Allen. And if Nick Bosa already is making $170 million, T.J. Watt, Miles Garrett, when they get new deals, they could be in the $200 million range. If Josh Allen and Brian Burns are getting $140 to $150, Jacksonville, for them, you know, and the people that say that, oh, well, this was a bad move, I kind of see where you're coming from, and I do somewhat agree with you. You see, Josh Allen, if you would have let him walk, you would have had the ability to sign more players to fill more holes on your roster because you still don't have a true number one wide receiver. Your offensive line still is in, and your defense still needs a little bit more work. And when you're investing so much money into Josh Allen and he's going to be taking up so much cap space and then you have to get a long-term deal worked out with Trevor Lawrence, these two guys are going to be taking a big portion of the salary cap. For the next 4 years, Josh Allen's cap hit 11.5 this year, 39.4 in 2025, 29.4 million in 2026, and 31.1 million in 2027. And he does, well, they do have a potential out in that year. Let's say it doesn't work out. They can choose to get out of that, and they don't have to take any dead cap hit at all. But it kind of is risky paying this dude so much money based on what he did last year, even though it kind of is your fault you had to pay this much money because you could have got him for less if you would have locked him up long-term last year. But you played around. He had a good season. And you had to pay him accordingly. Josh Allen, can he keep up this production? I don't think he's going to be a consistent 18.5 sack guy. He definitely will come back down to earth a little bit. But he definitely is good enough to give you double-digit sacks every single season. His first year in the league, he had 10.5 sacks. Second season, he got injured. The next 2 years, he had around 7 sacks. Those are decent numbers. And then you got to think with him having to deal with coaching turnover, having to get acclimated to a new scheme. You got Trayvon Walker coming on. That can help Josh Allen. Josh Allen, I don't think this is going to be a deal that Jacksonville is going to look back and they're going to regret. I feel they should be being really happy. They should feel really happy right now that they finally were able to secure one of their former first-round picks to a long-term deal because the last couple of first-round picks they've had, they've not made it to second contracts with Jacksonville. This is a big win for Jacksonville and the franchise retaining Josh Allen. I'm glad they were able to get the deal done. Yes, it is a lot of money to invest into a dude like this, but having a good edge rusher, even if they're a B-tier edge rusher like Josh Allen, they still are a really valuable piece to having a championship team. It's a quarterback-driven league. All right, quarterbacks are making more money than anybody. Who affects the game more? Other than QBs, edge rushers, and offensive tackles. That's why they're getting paid so much money. You got to get after the quarterback. You got to affect them somehow. How are you going to stop them if you don't have high-end pass rushers? That's why they make so much money. As a passing league, you got to get guys who can impact the passing game. That's what Josh Allen does. That's why he's getting so much. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you guys enjoyed this episode, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. We'll greatly appreciate it. Give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. If you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do so, and it's free, give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Greatly helps us out a lot. If you have a question that you would like answered on a future episode, you can submit them on Instagram and X at JTSports_ is our Instagram handle. And at JTSports_ is where you can find us on X. We will be doing another mailback episode in a couple of days. If you want to get one of your questions answered, all you got to do is send them in on X and Instagram. Shout out to everybody that's tuned in to the live chat on YouTube. Shout out to Kate Rohn. Shout out to my guy, Meanzo. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. I'm aiming to live stream again this Friday. We'll see, though, but I am going live with college football with Sam tomorrow. So be on the lookout for that. I'm going to post it in the community tab. But I appreciate everybody for tuning in, and I'll see you guys shortly with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.